Good afternoon, everybody. This is the Senate Education Committee. It is March 24th at approximately 4:01 p.m. Thursday. Let the record show that we have a quorum. We have Senator Gardner, Senator Huggins, Senator Giesel, myself, Senator Dunleavy, and I'm anticipating Senator Stevens. Today we've got hearings, and the hearings will consist of folks nominated for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, and also the State School Board. We have three names before us for the what we call the PTPC, Professional Teaching Practice Commission, and we have two names before us for the State School Board. We're going to start with the PTPC, as they call it, Professional Teaching Practices Commission first. We have folks online. Senator Stevens is with us right now. So the first person we're going to go to online is David Legg. David Legg, are you online?
Yes, I'm here.
So David, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and what your interest is in being on this particular committee, and then we may be asking you some questions, okay?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, my name is David Legg. Currently, I work at Chuviak High School. My background, really, I'm a product of the Anchorage School District. I grew up and was raised and graduated from Bartlett High School. My teaching career spans about 18 years in state, and it's split about half between some rural locations, Wainwright Barrow, Southwest Region School District. The other half is split pretty evenly between the Kenai Peninsula and Anchorage, where I'm currently the principal at Chuviak. In terms of my interest on being on the commission, I think that the commission's a vital aspect of just the checks and balances in our system. You know, we trust teachers to care for our students and children, and just to, there needs to be in every system a check and balance, and the commission serves this purpose. And so I can kind of consider it an honor to be able to be asked to fill this position, but it's just, I think my experience and background in education, I think I can be an asset to the commission as it exists today.
Thank you. Questions from members of the committee for Mr. Legg? Mr. Legg, we want to thank you, and I'm going to stay online for a moment because I want to go over two things that I missed when we opened up. So, Professional Teaching Practices Commission, Professional Teaching Practice Profession 1420-37A, teachers are required by state law to be certificated instructors in institutions of higher learning. School administrators, school program administrators, and school counselors are within the teaching profession. The composition of the commission is made up of five classroom teachers, one principal, one superintendent, one representative of the office of the commissioner, and one representative of an Alaskan institution of higher learning. We just had Mr. Legg on, and he is representing the teaching profession, correct, Mr. Legg?
I am the principal designation.
Principals. Thank you. Principal's designation, and there's one slot for principal. And before we continue, and I'll mention this one other time before we close, in accordance with AS 3905080, the Education Committee reviews the following nominees and recommends that appointments to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission as well as the State School Board be forwarded to a joint session for consideration. This is how the process works, and I'm just doing this for the folks online. The nominations are not decided here in this committee. This is merely a hearing to be able to learn more about the nominees and then ask them questions. When this hearing is closed, the nominees are forwarded to the larger bodies when that action will take place before a joint session of both the House and the Senate in the near future. So it's at that stage that decisions are made regarding the appointments of folks or the concurrence of appointments. Any questions for Mr. Legg before we move on? Senator Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Legg, thank you for your willingness to serve, and I think your varied educational background will probably stand you in very good stead in the job that we anticipate you'll get. As we in this body, and this isn't directly related to your nomination or appointment, but I was captured by your August 2009 workshop presentation on data analysis and AYP attainment through data disaggregation. We've, on this committee, have heard about a program called ANSWERS, which is collecting data and analyzing it to sort of explore the impact and effectiveness of various educational programs. And I just want to ask you briefly, it's slightly off topic, Mr. Chair, if I might, and just say, do you think that it's possible to really use data in a way that's disaggregated, that that doesn't put student privacy at risk and yet allows us to get it, to analyze results effectively?
To answer your question, yes, I do believe it's possible. There's definitely protective measures that have to be put in place. In the particular item that you referenced, you know, I worked in the Kenai at the time, so I was overseeing the program. So, yes, I did have identifiable information with the students, but we were disaggregating the data to identify the students that needed intervention. So in that capacity, I did have knowledge, but I also used statewide assessment data through Kenai in my dissertation, and it was given to me stripped of identifiable information that we didn't want out there. But so you can strip the identifiable information out and look at programmatic things and whether they're effective or not. So, yes, in brief, you can use data to identify areas for improvement. And at the site level, you can use identifiable information with teachers and staff within a school building.
Thank you very much.
Any additional questions for Mr. Legg? Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Mr. Legg. Charlie Huggins here from Wasilla. And as I understand, you said you're currently the principal at Chugiak High School, correct?
Correct.
So let's assume for a moment that Chugiak High School is an independent school, doesn't have a school district over it, and you have lots of autonomy to make decisions. Tell me three things that you would cast off at your school, that either the state or the federal government, whomever it might be, that are now requiring you to do things. And then on the other hand, tell me three things, if you were king for a day, that you would do in your school.
If I were king for a day?
Yep.
Well, I think what I would add and what I would delete are somewhat the same things. I think that using assessments is critical in terms of improving instruction, but I think a little bit of centralized decision making gives us freedom and autonomy, but at the same time we lose the broader perspective and supports. But in just in terms of things that I would ditch if I could, I never really had the opportunity to think about that before because it's just ingrained in what we do. Maybe a little bit more autonomy in not the standards per se. There's nothing wrong with having general standards, but maybe in the delivery of programs, not usually speechless, but nobody's ever asked me what I could take off my plate at work before. I generally get things and I take them graciously and do them. So in focusing on what I would add,
okay, so Mr. Lake, while you're thinking about that, I will let both lobes of your brain work at the same time.
Sure.
You know, we're currently debating Aaron's Law, and, you know, essentially that would be us superimposing something on top of your school that it could be optional, could be unfunded mandate, most likely won't have any money associated with it, but if you did it, it would take time, some effort, and we know what time means and effort, that something else will have to drop off the table most likely. So do you need more things to do, or would it be handy for you to have Aaron's Law so you could drop something off that is a lower priority to you or your school?
Well, I can tell you this. The greatest need for any administrator or teacher right now is time. In the last, just even in the 2 years I've been here, the things and the changes in the infrastructure and the business practices, not only at local level, but state level too, with the new assessments coming online, it is just, time is the greatest need for all educators. And maybe that's why I'm struggling with what would I add or delete. It's really not that there's something that I think that we're doing that has no value. It's sometimes maybe the efficiency in which we do it or just the lack of time. So I'd really like to limit it to just time, because I find value in most things we do. It's just a matter of, is there enough time in the day to do it? And I'd really have to sit down thoughtfully at my school, because I think it varies from school to school in terms of the priorities. So I'd really have to sit down in a very thoughtful way and analyze if I wanted to get from point A to point B, given my staff and my population, which is quite different than, let's say, East High. My needs are significantly different. So I can't give you a global answer, but I certainly, with thought, could sit down and prioritize the things at Chugiak that I'm asked to do that might be more applicable somewhere else and less applicable here, and then kind of prioritize and work off the list that way. And I'd be glad to do that if you like, but just off the top of my head, I'd have to put more thought into it.
Yeah, no, that's good. I'm not trying to put you on the spot. So let's talk about one that's easier, the Legg legacy, right? David Legg has a legacy. Tell me, if you were putting the number one thing that you want to be known for, and you think people should know you because of what you've done and instituted or make happen or cooperated on, what would the number one thing be on the Legg legacy?
That's something I think about every day. And really, I want my legacy to be that I cared about kids, and that kids' lives were different as a result of my having been here. And I enjoy being a principal, because there's not a day goes by that in the halls or a parent in the store, I get validation daily of the value that this community puts on having an administrator in the building. And so my legacy really is that I made a difference in the lives of kids for a positive.
Yep, good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any additional questions for Mr. Legg? Thank you, Mr. Lay. We're going to now move on to our next individual, and that's Rebecca Henshoot. Rebecca, are you online?
Yes, I just unmuted my phone. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. So, Rebecca, once again, you're looking at your nominee for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. And can you tell us where you're from and what your current work is and anything else you want us to know about you, and then we may ask you some questions.
Sure. I'm the science specialist at my elementary school, so I have 400 students, second through fifth grade for science. I also am the coordinator for a gifted and talented program at my school in SITCA. And I think, if we were sitting down for a casual dinner, I'd tell you a lot. I think you have my resume, so you can kind of read up on anything you want to know. But I'm proud to say that I'm a long-term Alaskan, though not lifelong. I am a UAS graduate, and I love my profession, and I love my school, and I especially love my students.
Do you have a question?
I'd be happy to answer any questions.
No. I do it in a moment. Wait, okay. Miss Hemscoot, Charlie Huggins here from Wasilla. You teach science, is that correct?
Yes, my school moved to a science specialist model in 2010. So I have a dual role of science for each grade level, as well as the gifted program.
Right, so... And you're an elementary teacher, so do you also teach the other curriculum areas, or do students rotate to different teachers for the other curriculum areas?
I teach strictly science, and I do a different part of science each trimester, so every student in my school will have a trimester of life science, a trimester of earth science, and a trimester of physical science, but I do not do math or language arts lessons per se. They're embedded within the science that I do, but I'm not a classroom teacher.
Right. Thank you. And so with that in mind, I'm going to ask you about the geography bay. And you don't have to say anything about what the geography is about, other than, some schools observe and participate in geography bee, others don't. My question for you, in the world of science, is there an equivalent to the geography bee that students experience?
I'm sorry, I had to take you off speakerphone. So you were asking if there's a science bowl similar to the geography bee?
Yeah, exactly. Where you have a student that, quote, wins at the school site, and then they may go either to the district or to the state.
I'm not aware of one. There is the National Ocean Science Goal, the NOS Goal, which is about ocean science, and I believe that starts at middle school, at least in Alaska. I don't know of anybody participating at a younger grade level. And then there's Academic Decathlon, but that's not strictly science. So I'm not aware of any kind of an academic competition, certainly at my grade level, that's just science.
Oh.
I'd love to hear about one if you know of one.
I don't. I sort of admire the Geography B process, but that doesn't mean every subject has it. But I just wondered about that. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Additional questions for members of the committee? So, Rebecca, I have one. This is Senator Dunleavy. Tell us again why would you want to be nominated for this commission? And if you could just give us, just talk about that a little bit.
Sure. Well, I was honored to be nominated by my peers. Colleagues asked if I would serve or if I would put my name forward. And, of course, it's an honor to be selected by the governor. That's a huge honor. But my goals in serving, the reason I want to be part of the PTPC is I think we have sort of a dual role. First of all, of course, is protecting students. The number one goal, I think, has to be to make sure that we protect both the reputation of the profession and the students themselves. But my other goal is to also ensure fair and due process for teachers who have been brought before the PTPC. I think if something serious enough has occurred that a teacher has come before the commission, I want to make sure that they have a fair process that's thorough.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, additional questions or comments from members of the board? Seeing none, what we're going to do is we're going to leave this section of the hearings open regarding the PTPC because we have one other individual that is scheduled to be heard today but is not currently online or in the audience. And since we have some time, we're going to just take a break from this and then we'll move into the nominees for a state school board. So we'll just take a quick minute break for a little transition here. Folks online, David and Rebecca, we're going to be waiting for a little while until one of the other nominees shows up. We're going to move into the state school board nominee, so just letting you know, you don't have to hang online if you do not choose. We'll be forwarding your names on as per process. So anyway, we're going to be moving into the another group here in just a moment. So we have So we're back in session, and we're moving to the nominees for Alaska State School Board. Just going to read a couple of the statutes regarding the school board. State Board of Education and Early Development, Section 1407.075, creation that was created at the head of the Department of Education and Early Development, a Board of Education and Early Development consisting of 7 members. The 7 members of the board, no more than 4 of whom shall be members of the same political party as the governor, shall be appointed by the governor, subject to confirmation by a majority of the members of the legislature in joint session. In appointing board members, the governor shall consider recommendations made by recognized educational associations in the state. 1 member shall be appointed from each of the 4 judicial districts and 3 from the state at large, with at least 1 member representing regional educational attendance areas. The members are entitled to the expenses, travel, and per diem allowances provided by law. A member may act and receive compensation from the date of appointment until confirmation or rejection by the legislature. Term of office, the members of the board shall be appointed for overlapping five-year terms commencing on March 1st, following the date of the member's appointment, except as provided in AS 390508. A member appointed to fill a vacancy serves for the unexpired term of the member whose vacancy is filled. A vacancy occurring during a term of the office is filled in the same manner as the original appointment. So again, we have two individuals before us today. We have Dr. Keith Hamilton, and then we will have Esther Cox. So, Dr. Hamilton, can you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about yourself, why you're interested in being on the board, and then there'll be a series of questions I'm sure that members will have for you.
That's great. Well, thank you very much. 15 years in Alaska. I moved here from Colorado with my family to plant Alaska Christian College in Soldotna. We're a two-year accredited degree-granting institution that serves 90% of our student body as Alaska Native. So we're a bridge from the bush to the four-year university system. We have the highest number of students this year at 70. We're enrolled this fall and spring. I have been through College South Pacific University, graduated in 1984. And then moved on to seminary, Fourth Theological Seminary, and then I was doing my doctorate work. I have a doctorate in youth and family culture from Fuller Seminary. So I have approximately 30 years in the workforce, both as a pastor and also a college president. Family of five.
Thank you. Questions for members of the board? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've known Dr. Hamilton for some time and worked on a task force, legislative task force with him, and I know his background really impressive with his academic credentials as well as his success as a president of this college. Your experience working with Native students is particularly valuable, I think, to the school board. What do we do? What's the future for Native students? We're facing financial difficulty. We're talking about even changing from, I've heard rumors from a 10-member student to have a school to a 50. That means a lot of students are not going to have a school. You have a residential program. Is that a part of the answer, or to send or bring students together in residential? And we have an enormous problem our Native students have an enormous problem in graduating. But how do we solve some of that?
A lot of problems out there, through the chair, Senator Stevens. I know that our community is much like a village within a village, and our students come and we offer a lot of things that are outside of just a normal academic program. We have a full-time counseling center on our campus to help some of these students. To answer your question directly, is I think that regional schools are a plus. Homesickness is one of the greatest, even the college level, homesickness is really strong. But Mount Edgecombe is a fine example. Galena is another fine example of schools where students can come together in larger communities. I do know that some of our districts have just got, one school. It's a one-site district, and to connect up in regional would save a lot of money over a long time, but there's a lot of infrastructure has to come into that as well. I think that we've got, with our Native education, so much deficit that it's going to take some pretty big overhaul for us to move ahead with young Native people who want a chance at an education. We heard today about school teachers, how few of them are Native that are teaching, and how from the outside they come in and they're just gone within a very short time, and it's got to turn around for the future of Alaska.
Thank you.
Additional questions from members of the committee? Senator Huggins?
Yeah, thank you, and Dr. Hamilton, thank you. I noticed where, ¿hablo español?
Sí, claro.
And I see you were down in Ecuador and Mexico. So when you were consulting in that neck of the woods and helping people resurrect or excel or whatever the right circumstance was, what were the commonalities that you see that our society had, both educationally and socially, and maybe some of the contrast in those two countries vice U.S.?
Yes, I would say that I felt most at home in Bush, Alaska, after returning from living a year in Mexico, and a lot of the same cultural noise and also some of the same problems. But when I hit the Indian reservations of America, I really felt like we were apples to apples. South America, Latin America, to Bush, Alaska students, impoverished, lower educated, struggling to make ends meet, low educational opportunities, a lot of similarities, wonderful people with big smiles and a lot of hope, but there's not a lot of opportunity or resources for them to get that. And that's why we planned for Alaska Christian College 15 years ago, to give an opportunity for hope for Alaska Native people who have some of the same deficits.
So if I might, Mr. Chairman, just I know in 2011 you were in Mexico.
And I was just there last week.
Oh, you were, huh? So, I mean, we see news releases on what's happening in Mexico,
yes.
And it reminds me when I was in Korea a long time ago, and family would be upset because they saw a demonstration and somebody burning something, but you're never subjected to that because of where you are and what you're doing. But did you see the Wild Wild West when you were in Mexico as far as the drug cartels? And
no, I lived there. I've taken 750 high school students over the last 25 years and college students from ECC to Mexico across the border, you know, places where there was some drug activity and some damage, and I've never had a problem, never had an issue. And I loved it. Picture Eskimo Mexico. Okay, just get the picture. It's just a fun opportunity. We've never had a problem in 25 years.
Right. Yeah, and I will just draw what I think is a point that we all should think about. I assume in your career you don't have to concern yourself with the separation of church and state in your institution. Is that accurate?
Yeah, we're fully a faith-based institution. We've been a part of the success is that we're able to introduce some of the pieces of faith into their regular curriculum as well. Gives them a much more hope, and also another standard for what they're going to do when they get to the back of their village.
Right. Very good. And my next and final question is trivia. I got a brain cramp. Where Arvada, Colorado?
Northwest of the city of Denver.
Got it.
That's
thank
it.
You. Thank you.
Questions from members of the committee? Senator Gardner?
Thank you. And thank you for your willingness to serve. You have a very interesting resume.
Kind of crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, and it includes your Myers-Briggs personality type. I've never seen that on a resume before. It's not completely inappropriate. It's just unusual. How did that happen?
Actually a CV that I did, curriculum vitae, and that's pretty common for curriculum vitaes, and I kind of mushed it over to make it into my resume.
Okay, thank you.
I have several questions.
Yes, Senator.
So tell us again, why do you want to be part of the school board?
Yes.
You've been nominated, but why do you want to be part of it?
Yes, honest truth, I was invited in the last administration to consider being a part of the Board of Regents, which is higher ed, which is my area, which made more sense. And I gladly was heading down that direction. With the change of administration, I got a call from boards and commissions saying, you know, that list is there, but we all have a need also in the K-12. I said, I'm not a K-12 person. I've done K-12, but I'm a higher ed guy. And the answer from boards of commission was, we're the bridge person to help K-12 and the college. Nobody who understands the bridge that needs to be made. And there's definitely a separation between the college system and the K-12 system. And I heard that, but then it started to make sense that I could serve perhaps better as a person of that caliber. But I'll just say, bottom line is, I love students. I've been a youth pastor for 20 years. If I moved to Alaska, I love young people. My life's been dedicated to my wife. We have three of our own kids going all through public school system, so we're dedicated to education.
Thank you. Senator Stevens, an issue we've all been dealing with here in the legislature, the teachers' unions, the school board, all been dealing with the issue of teacher evaluation, local school boards, tying teacher evaluation to student progress. What's your thoughts on that? How do we do that and do it right?
Sure, through the chair. You know, today is my first day. I got a packet of 375 pages 2 weeks ago to read, so I'm still getting caught up on that, honestly, Senator. I feel like there definitely has to be a connection. What I heard today in a few testimonies was that the connection has to be made. We're actually doing legislation tomorrow, voting on certain things that are going to make that tie-in happen. I look back to my own days in school, and I had some teachers who kicked their feet back up on the desk and for an hour, kids ran around in the room, and there was really no way to have that person held accountable. And this accountability stuff that we're voting on tomorrow, I think, is a great step. I concur with everything I heard today as legislation headed in that direction.
Thank you.
Senator Hodges.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Common Core. There's a rising drumbeat and echoes and resonance over that across the nation,
yes,
in the state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of it is based on absolute fact and heartfelt. Others probably get distorted a little bit, but there's some concern. Can you just help us shape what your experience, knowledge base of Common Core is, and to get us a point of departure?
Well, I was here in January waving, shaking hands with you and with you and with you here representing my college. That's the first time I was ever really approached with the issues related to Common Core, because it was a topic of issue here when I arrived on the Capitol. And I did my research, started it at least, watching videos, reading pamphlets and kinds of things. And I have to tell you that I have great concern if our state went Common Core. I think there's good and bad in everything. And I think there's some bad that I would not want to throw into our state. I'm not a federal overreach person. I believe our state is our state, and we shouldn't have folks from outside telling us this is how we're going to do it. So I do have a struggle with that. And also I struggle with the data mining that's supposed to be happening in conjunction with all of this. I'm a privacy person, and I'm an Alaskan, a little bit independent. So I think I struggle with some of that, but I'm ready to find out more. And we have standards, and much of our standards are similar to the Common Core. 2+2 still equals 4, whether it's in the Common Core curriculum or the Alaska State Standard curriculum. But I would be remiss if I said I knew a lot about it. I'm still learning.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's one of those, in my opinion, that all of us have got to get smarter on, but be sensitive to the feelings of no matter what your background is on the subject, because we have to be intellectually informed, yes, so that we can respond with some degree of accuracy. And you know, quite frankly, if what's happening or projected to happen is outside the norms that we can support, then you know how we can do something better. So I would just ask you to help keep us informed on that.
Well, I'll be raising any flags that I see along the way that I think are outside of what an Alaskan would prefer for their children's education.
Yeah, thank you.
Senator.
Thank you. In terms of your great concerns about the Common Core, do you have concerns with the standards themselves, or just the process and the assessments?
It's the process of Washington and what we've come in and said, this is kind of a one-stop shop, shows up in Alaska, adopt it, make it happen. I don't, I'm not an expert. I'm just starting off the last 3 or 4 weeks on it. But overall, I would say I don't have the concerns that are more about what's being done from outside to us in Alaska. The process is difficult for me.
Thank you. And I think there's sort of different points of view about the
process.
But in terms of the standards themselves, have you had a chance to sort of look at them and see what they really say? Because I get lots of emails from people complaining about how we came up with it, where they came from, and they sometimes have some inaccuracies in them.
Right.
But in terms of actually looking at the standards, I haven't really heard from anybody directly who has concerns about that. And another common problem is that people confused curriculum or pedagogy with what the standards actually are. So if you get a chance, and I know you're kind of new to this field, but to actually look at the standards themselves.
Yes. I do have a copy of them. I've glanced through both of the, and I have done a preview. And my question is, what is missing? Because everything I saw there didn't look like it was bad or wrong. And again, I'm not a K-12 educator. I'd like to know what was missing that we were leaving out, perhaps, more than what was actually there from what I read.
Well, I'd be interested in that, too, but I don't think that's been part of the discussion.
No.
Thank you.
Did you say, Doctor, do you have you had children in the public school system?
Yes, all three.
Okay. Was there anything taught or presented in the public school system when your kids were going to school that concerned you, that you didn't think should be in the public schools, being taught in the public schools?
My children never came home with any homework assignment or any statement from a teacher that caused me any concern. We're in a Kenai school district. I can't pronounce the board, but the Kenai High School and middle school. We've had tremendous teachers and principals who cared for my children. We never had any concerns. I think I'm known to be a more conservative leaning person, and our schools seem to also have that standard along the way. And I was overall pleased with our school's education for our kids. I'd send them back there again tomorrow.
I have several questions, but I'm going to defer to folks, senators, when you have a question. So the next question would be, You've heard of the term of school choice.
Yes.
You know, what is your view of school choice from your perspective, how you see it or understand it? What does it mean to you?
Yeah. I have a selfish answer and I have a general answer. The selfish answer is I want my child to have the best education possible at whatever limits and resources I can get that child to. And if that means there's a choice for my child to go to another school or to be offered some sort of a voucher to get there, I will take it because of my own child. I've got three kids that I have been given that I need to look out for. They're number one for me. In the general sense, I think that there are a lot of options for students to fit into charter schools and into specific immersion schools and into native schools, native focus schools. A lot of options out there, and choices are varied, and I appreciate that. When it comes to, if you speak specifically about vouchers, I think I would stand probably along with that discussion, saying I want to see it possibly go forward. I don't know enough about it, but I know that given a child who would have a choice at a better place, I think they should have an opportunity.
I'm going to go to the next question, unless anyone has a follow-up. Senator Huggins.
Yeah, it's not a follow-up on that specifically, but I want to give a shout-out because of your background and your doctor of ministry. I'm one of those that believe that all of us at some point see someone and watch them, and we kind of adopt them as a role model. We admire them. And I can safely say that in our kids, my wife and I, it's three of them,
mm-hmm.
that when they went all in the same classroom, multi-age classroom, a lady by the name of Nina Brady. Nina Brady was a nun once upon a time. When our kids had her as a teacher, in the same classroom, because she had a 2 through 6th grade classroom. She now has a 2 through 8th classroom.
Oh my.
Anyway, Nina Brady had two kids, and one lives in Finland now, and the other, I think, is in France, so they're international kinds of students. But when our kids come home, and they're living around the U.S., and one's in Europe, they always go see Nina Brady. And, I guarantee you, if 5 o'clock this afternoon, Nina Brady's still teaching, if at 5 o'clock she needed something done in her classroom, she could call, and a whole bunch of people would respond. So I was telling that story. There were three priests that were coming through the camp this past week. Great, great, great Americans, great Alaskans. I was telling that story, and you could see their chest kind of pump out because they recognize the business of being a nun once upon a time, and the profile they had. But it's heartwarming to me to realize that Nina Brady, who was a nun, can be a teacher in a public education system, and everybody loves her.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Another question, doctor. Should we call you doctor?
Just don't call me late for dinner.
That's my motto, too. It's a little bit of a long question. So how do you view parental rights within the public education system? Do you believe that parents retain the right to remove a child from a course or a lesson or something, even an assessment that they don't feel is in the best interest of their child? Or do you feel that once the child is enrolled in that school, those rights end at the doorstep and that the school actually takes over, takes those rights over? What are your thoughts on parental rights in public education?
Those are my children. They're mine. They're not the school's. I lend them to the school each day to provide an education, but I have every right as a parent to see that my child has the escape clause, if necessary, from a class or a curriculum or a movie that wants to be shown in a class that I don't feel like my family is in our best interest for them to watch. We'll figure out something else to do for that class period. My will, God ordained, is to be the parent to that child, and that's what will be the primary decision-making for me.
Thank you. I've got several more questions. Once again, if you have follow-ups to these questions, please ask. And you've talked about, Do you think we spend enough money on public education? Do we need to spend more?
I don't know enough about our budget. I looked at it once on the airplane home from Mexico as I was reading that long packet. I don't know if it's high or if it's low or if it's just right. I really do not know. I do know that teachers give and give and give, and they're not compensated enough, in my opinion. How many times have I heard about, you know, parties that they throw for kids or bring from home, you know, jeans because a student doesn't have any jeans to wear, or buying classroom supplies because there's just not enough supply. I hear that over and over again. And if there's any place that I would recommend any kind of an increase, it would be in the area of teachers. They're our greatest asset in this school. I like buildings and I like buses, but it rises and falls on the teacher. I want to keep morale high, and if that means some budget obligations, then that's where I would put my money.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Dr. Hamill, let's mentally leap forward to the year 2045.
Okay.
And you're in charge, but you're overseeing in your omnipotent position you'll be in once confirmed. And you're looking at how are we going to teach those kids? And we look at their learning style. We realize things have changed a little bit from when you were a student, I was a student, and what keeps people's attention and everything from Blackberries to high-speed computers. Tell me a couple, three traits of you'd like to see that a student would be in. May not be a classroom, might be in their home cubicle or whatever the case may be. Give me a couple traits that you vision. Your vision.
Talk about character traits, Senator?
Oh, no. The kind of how we're going to take those students and present something or allow them to experience something that they learn from, rather than me standing in front of a chalkboard drawing out the math problems. How are we going to leap forward in year 2045 and interface with students and learning and make them be all they can be?
Well, I'll be 85 years old. I'll probably forget most of what I know at that point. I think technology is going to run the future of our schools. And our learning. I believe that technology is going to be way beyond. Think about 10 years ago where we were. You put me at another 30. I mean, we're talking incredible changes in education. My greatest concern is high tech, low touch. And I hope that at that point, the traits that we would know is that teachers are still interacting face to face with young people who need role models and mentors and people in their lives that care for them, even love them, and find ways to introduce them to the greatest education they can have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Question, what's your view of homeschooling? What you know about it, what is your view of homeschooling?
I think it's appropriate in some cases. I think there's some parents, again, back to parental rights, that want to make sure that their child's educated fully in the way that they wish to have in the public school. Maybe can't offer that. It should be offered. I think there's some cases where we're in the villages, we're in far-flung places, they just can't get the education pieces that they need because the schools are too small, not enough teachers, not enough curriculum. They have to offer other opportunities, other venues, vehicles to get them to their full education. So I think there are places like that. My wife and I didn't choose that route for our children, although I was on sabbatical last semester. We had no choice but to homeschool. We took them with us overseas. And so there are cases like that. I think it's very prudent and very helpful. I think that some of the greatest students are still in our public education system, and I think we make every effort to keep them there. But when it's an opportunity and makes sense, I think homeschooling is a great choice.
Do you think the state should be the ones that decide if somebody can homeschool, or should that be the parents?
Well, there's money and dollars attached to homeschooling right now, so right now the state does say, you know.
There's two types of homeschooling in Alaska. There's those associated with the public school program, which there's money and dollars, and there's those detached from the public system that they don't, they're not part of the public system.
I'm not aware of that group. I didn't know that existed.
Thousands of Alaskans.
Okay.
Okay.
We get our letters through the public schools, so I'm not aware.
Yeah, that's fair. Thank you. Questions? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So you touched a little bit on online education. It seems to me like a lot of folks are counting on that as being the answer. Is it truly the answer?
No. Long-term delivery for all into online education, I think it would leave out a huge component of what education is. I think, again, great in some circumstances and situations, but I've got friends who have finished all their master's degrees online, and they've come back and they've got some head knowledge and they've got some stuff they can put in their resume, but they had no connection with the professor directly. They had no connection with the school. They had no connection with other students. There's a piece missing. So integrating that with face-to-face, I think, is helpful. If you can do a partial of each of those, I think that's one of the win-win.
And so if I follow up on a K-12 level, different than at a college level, how does that work with a student who, if he's not catching the class, you put him on online, he's not going to catch it then either. How do we move through that situation?
There seems to be a mentor in their life, an educator mentor in their life that is still connecting with them, even if they're doing a lot of online stuff. I don't know how that happens. I don't know how it happens financially, but all of us have we call them school counselors, but even more than that, a person to walk through them as a mentor day-to-day and understand what the other issues beyond just your school classes are. That's what would need to happen.
Thank you.
What should the goal of public education be from your perspective, Doctor?
Was it Ben Franklin? I think that started our public school system. I could be wrong. But also, at least 200 and some years as a country, we have provided at a very affordable cost, many different disciplines of education for people who perhaps could not afford it. When I lived in Mexico, when I've lived in the inner city, obviously some of the children that come from some of those places are completely under-resourced, and without somebody else in the district paying their property taxes, they wouldn't have an opportunity for education. They couldn't figure out online, I'm sure, so they would need to have the provision of government to help them to provide some of that funding. And so I think that public education specifically is a role that's been offered to those who both have resources and don't. It's a way everybody's on an even stead at some point. And I think that I know my children learn a lot more. What's that TV show, Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? My kids, I couldn't do that show. I mean, they really do great in our schools, and they can figure that stuff out even though I couldn't all the time. So its role is to educate in all the disciplines that we need to be successful in life, get a job, workforce, be successful people, and then die happy.
Senator? And follow up on that, Chairman, my reading of Franklin, Benjamin Franklin, is that one of his criteria for education was to create citizens and citizenship.
That's good.
And what are we going wrong there? How come more people aren't voting? How come more people aren't involved in their communities? And what can we do to correct that?
You know, there's been erosion in America and a lot of those areas of people taking ownership of their country. Patriotism, I would say, is eroding. Having a feeling that we're in it together. Volunteerism across our nation. Entitlement has produced, at least for many of our students, a degree of if I wait long enough, somebody will pay for it or forgive it. And that's just what we see ourselves personally, and that's anecdotal. I believe that we're in a place now where our universities, our colleges have changed dramatically in the last 25 to 30 years, what we're teaching and what we're doing to encourage them toward being citizens. I wouldn't define some of the larger universities the way we define their own little private college in how they educate people. I wouldn't agree with some of that. So I think that we're definitely not going in the upward direction toward better citizenship.
Thank you. According to the internet, Ben Franklin never graduated from school. He ran away from Boston at about 16 after the Latin school, and the rest is history in Philadelphia.
Wow.
I'm not, those online, I'm not advocating you run away from school and go to Philadelphia. I'm just as a follow-up. Do we have any additional questions for Dr. Keith Hamilton? I want to thank you for hanging in there and answering our questions. We got to know you a little bit better.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So next, we'll ask Esther Cox to come up. And And for the purposes of fairness, Esther, I'm probably going to ask you the same questions I asked Dr. Keith Hamilton.
Okay.
So, Esther, can you tell us who you are, give us a little background, and tell us why you're interested in going back on the board?
Yes. My name is Esther Cox, and I'm beginning to feel like a member of this committee. So, at any rate, I have... I'll just give you briefly some of my background. I stepped foot in the state of Alaska in 1965, and I have been involved in education every day since. I was a teacher. I taught in Juneau for 3 years. I taught in Anchorage. I taught in a special program that was a grant program for Alaska Natives only who were in the metropolitan areas on the boarding home program. That goes way back to the early 70s. I've been an assistant principal. Of course, my background is secondary education. An assistant principal at Principal. I was an educational consultant when we built South Anchorage High School. I was on the education transition team for Governor Murkowski, and I was then appointed to the Alaska State Board of Education. And as most of you know, I'm an old-timer on the State Board of Education and absolutely delighted to have been reappointed again for another term. Why do I want to be on the state board? I think I bring a wide range of experience and expertise. I think I bring knowledge that I have gained by having been on the state board as long as I have, and I bring a real compassion for education for the kids in the state of Alaska.
Thank you. Questions for members of the board? Senator Stevens?
Well, Mr. Chairman, is it right to issue the Alaska standards? I know you were there, whether you chose to be or not, you were there during that transition when we were dealing with the Common Core. How did you go about bringing folks to the table, getting teachers and others involved in coming up with the standards that we now have?
Frankly, I didn't do a whole lot because that fell to the department to get the people involved. And I have information with me, if you're interested in it at all, of how many meetings and how many people were involved. They were involved all over the state. But I would like to tell you about how I became really initiated into the Common Core standards. I attended a regional meeting for the National School Boards Association. And there were two gentlemen there. One was from the state school officers, chief school officers organization, I don't know, CCSSO or something, and also from the state governors association. And of course, those are the two organizations that had pulled together the Common Core. I don't think that I have ever seen such arrogance displayed ever as with those two gentlemen. They informed that you would accept the Common Core, you would accept it in total, and if you wanted to add 15% changes, you could do that, but you couldn't accept 85% of the Common Core, and then 15% it had to be over the top of it. And I came home then and talked to the then commissioner and said, you know, I don't think this is for us. I think that I know our standards have to be more rigorous. We have to do something about our standards. But our standards have to come from the people who are going to implement those standards. I think I've told this committee before, if I've learned much as a principal in a school with a faculty, the best idea I ever had fell flat on its face unless I could convince people that it was their idea because they were the users and they were going to have to implement it. And so the same thing happened with our Alaska State standards. Yes, in some respects, they mirror much of what's in the Common Core. I think there's 47% changes in language arts and maybe 45 or something. Don't quote me on those numbers, but it's fairly close. And the math standards. And you'd understand that. How many standards can you write for Algebra 1, for example? But I feel like our standards are a representation of what people in our state saw the need with the additional rigor. Additionally, we had them vetted thoroughly by the state or by the University of Alaska system. Excuse me. And I think that's key because, as you well know, We have the sterling reputation of some 54% or something of students who have to take developmental courses when they start matriculating at the university system. And so university vetting our standards was key, and it was the issue, and that they said if students meet these standards, they'll be ready to go into credit-bearing classes at the university system. So, okay, it wasn't expeditious. It was more expensive, but it having our own Alaska standards belongs to the state of Alaska. They're ours. If they don't work, we can change them. They do work, carry on.
Follow up?
No, thank you.
Questions on this side? Senator Huggins?
Yeah, thank you.
By the way, Senator Huggins, we heard about your teacher this morning.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Yeah. Nina Brady's certainly a great Alaskan, great American. I'm not being flippant, but I'll speak for myself. I've got a number of emails that had your name on it about Common Core. And some of those, if I was going to put a title on what that was, it'd say, Esther Cox is the mother of Common Core in Alaska. And I say that only to give you a chance to speak on your behalf and your perspective. Now, the unfortunate part about it, the good news for us is it sometimes takes a while for Alaskans or Americans to wake up about the reality. And the best example I can think of that is sort of contemporary is in the city of Anchorage, they had everyday math. And I think now in retrospect that most of us would say, you know, we probably could have did better than that. But I don't want to debate everyday math, but, you know, some of the parents says, you know, we're confident we can do better than that, and we don't want our kids exposed to that because we think that that's a detriment to their mathematical education. So I say all that to give you an opportunity, you've already said, to answer people that are sending emails saying, Esther Cox is the mother of Common Core in Alaska. And I just ask you, give you a chance to describe why that's not true, and you mentioned 47, 44% and what have you. And the other part before you speak, you know, one of the things that I've become a little bit cynic on K-12 education for lots of reasons, but the business of tweaking on the margin, and we say we got standards and 10 people read them, 10 teachers, and they mean different things, and we just never move the needle, in my estimation, as far as moving a bit further. And it always sounds good to talk about rigor of standards and what have you, but that's having a standard and people pursuing and meeting those standards across the state, that's a whole different critter. So on the other hand, we know that if you look statistically at our schools, there's a lot to be desired. But now is a chance when we as a country are kind of go through a metamorphosis. And I'll ask you a very specific question because it's not clear to me, but I think in the lower 48, the president has coined the phrase race to the top. And there were some states that got pretty sizable chunks of money if they raise their hand and says, yes, we will do the things it takes to be a participant and race to the top. Did that include Common Core, or do you recall what the prerequisites were for race to the top?
I know that we didn't apply for race to the top money. Excuse me. And I think that it did require Common Core. It may have said, or equally as rigorous standards, but at that time our standards were not completed. But there were some other contingencies, and I'm sorry that I can't tell you what those are, Senator Huggins, because I don't remember what all the contingencies were in Race to the Top. But the standards were an issue. And by the way, such notoriety I have never expected in my professional career. And I have to tell you, I am the mother of 5 children, and that's all I am the mother of.
I don't mean to be flippant about that. But there's one other piece, and I'm sorry I wandered around there earlier, but it has to do with textbooks. And as I recall, there companies are producing textbooks in the name of the standards, and some have been earmarked as the right book or the selected book, according to where you're from. And I've heard a number of people, to include teaching professionals, that said, we're not so sure that, forget about the standard for a second, but we're not so sure that the textbook, this quote, the Common Core textbook, is what is appropriate for the kids, the best learning, on and on. Is any of that kind of true? Maybe you've never looked at one of those textbooks, never been exposed to them?
No, I have not seen the textbooks, but it doesn't surprise me that many textbook companies are designing their textbooks with trying to meet the Common Core. What I'm sure you understand, Senator Huggins, is that this board doesn't do anything with textbooks. That is up to the local district. We don't designate what textbooks they need to buy or anything as far as textbooks are concerned. It may be an issue for some districts who you passed a law that says you can't spend any money in any fashion on anything that has to do with Common Core. That's kind of the sum and substance of it, I believe. So that would work a hardship on districts. They would have to find textbooks that weren't designed toward the Common Core, as far as I can see. But we do nothing as far as textbooks are concerned.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if I might, one more, just because, you know, I mean, people will approach me, others are listening, and that hence the deluge of emails here in the last few days. But going forward, okay, when you recognize, and you mentioned the term notoriety, what would your different, or what tack would you take that creates a greater distinction on your separation from Common Core vice what Alaska has, and safeguards and sensitivity to parents in Common Core, because you're in a position that, you know, is omnipotent, for lack of a better term. So help me out on that. I'm just giving you a chance to tell what Esther is going to do in the future.
You know, I don't have a forum that where I speak to people about, you know, the standards of the state of Alaska, except through our board. And our board is very open and very definitive about the fact that we have Alaska standards, and those are the standards that we have accepted. Part of the issue may be that some districts, my district, for example, has adopted the Common Core standards. But that had nothing to do with the State Board of Education or Esther Cox.
Can I do a follow-up? You mentioned something else, and I'm just curious. If there was state law that said that money cannot be spent for Common Core, how does Anchorage buy its textbooks for Common Core?
Senator Donnelly, I don't know about the interpretation of that. And all I can say is I don't think legislative intent ever was that districts would not be able to supply their schools or pay their teachers if they had adopted Common Core. So I don't know about legislative intent.
Question, Senator Stevens.
And maybe just back to the very basics, could you clarify the responsibility of the school board, the state school board, and the commissioner, office of commission, as compared to districts? Standards are your responsibility, if I'm right,
yes.
And the curriculum is the responsibility of the districts. Is that right?
That's correct.
So you are not responsible for curriculum or teaching or any of that?
Yes, by state law, we set the standard. The department and the school board sets the standards for the state, then it's remanded to the districts, and the districts, many districts are keeping their curriculum okay, but they are aligning it better with the new standards. It came up on the board today, and this is one that I have to think about for a while. Someone made the suggestion that perhaps there should be a state curriculum that would not be mandated, but would be available to students, to districts, particularly small districts that have trouble having enough time and enough people to, you know, rewrite their curriculum so it aligns with the standards. And that's what I'd have to think about. I certainly wouldn't want it to be mandated, because I firmly believe in local control. And that's not our issue, is to step on that.
The whole concept of standards, Common Core, federalism, data sharing, it's obviously it's problematic for a growing number of folks. When I say growing, I mean a year or two ago, there was not as many folks that are becoming more concerned. By state law, districts, they adopt their own curriculum. Mm-hmm. There's confusion, though, at the state level. The state school board adopts standards, but there's confusion as to whether school districts have to implement those standards. Currently, we have state standards that were adopted by Alaska, as you had said. They're called, I think they're called Alaska standards. But Anchorage and other school districts have adopted Common Core, which is a different set of standards. Do you know how, maybe you don't, and I'm just asking, but do you know how that's possible, if we have state law, state standards, but school districts can adopt different standards? They certainly can do curriculum, but the standards seem to be different for some school districts as well.
Well, but see, we don't mandate that everybody uses the Alaska standards. We say, okay, it would be just like the curriculum I'm talking about. If we found a curriculum that met the standards, that we could help districts out with, that they didn't have to do it. But it's like Anchorage. Anchorage, frankly, I think they jumped the gun. I talked to Dr. Steve Atwater. I said, what are you doing now in the Kenai? And he said, we have the Alaska state standards. So it's a matter of, again, not jumping on top of local control. And that's the best I can say about it.
I got a couple more questions. So you said you started teaching in 64?
Five.
65.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say you would have been my teacher. Anyway.
I'm probably old enough to be your grandmother.
I think I was in diapers in 64, but that's okay.
Hey, but it's Chris.
Anyway, in 65 is when ESEA came out from the Johnson administration. That was the first year of the Great Society. That was the first attempt at, there was no U.S. Department of Education until Jimmy Carter. So years before, this was the first grant. To the best of your ability, just how is education, public education, teaching changed from when you were doing it in 65 to now? Have things gotten better? Have things gotten worse? Have student outcomes gotten better? Have they gotten worse? In other words, from your perspective, all of this stuff, ESEA, new standards, Common Core, not Common Core, assessments, ASPE, this, that, have our outcomes gotten better from your perspective or not?
That's a very interesting question. I think we know more about our students than we did when I started teaching, because of the kinds of assessments that we can do and the ability to get more data so that we can do data-driven instruction. When I started teaching, you know, I taught English, they handed me a grammar book and a literature anthology and said, go forth and produce. And that was about it, and I didn't have the information. I mean, I could regale you with lots of stories about how we did report cards and what have you. So technology has made certainly a big difference as far as teaching is concerned. But the interesting part of your question, Senator, really is about the outcomes. And I'm not too sure that they have changed a whole lot.
And I appreciate that. And you have a perspective that I think is important. Knowing what you know now, would you have looked forward to having the would you look forward to being a teacher under the current way of doing things? Would you obviously you must have felt to some degree if you helped your students. Obviously over time you probably felt that you became a better teacher and that you helped more students. But do you think that having the federal government through ESEA, through their grants and receipt of the grants, have us do certain things? And do you think things like ASPE and grading schools and so forth, is that something that you wish you had when you were teaching?
Well, when I was teaching, of course, none of that existed. I think there's some good things. The major portion of the stuff that comes down from the federal government doesn't impress me. And I know that the unfunded mandates, for example, special education, probably certainly has been at least the mandate that we would give these kids equal treatment certainly has been to the betterment of not only teaching and learning, but to that particular population. But I think something's been lost from the local control. If I am correct, and if I remember my Constitution, I think there's about one line in the United States Constitution that remands education to the states. It doesn't say anything about federal intervention.
Right. I think the U.S. Constitution is actually silent because the states never gave up that right to the federal government. But your point is taken. Let me ask you another question. What's your view of the sharing of personal student and family data? In 65, you didn't have the tools, nor was there a perceived need for certain data. We're now looking at potential grants and programs, SLED, Answer Grant, all that stuff, to collect this data and to share this data under the stated reason to, you know, help, be a tool and help practitioners. Does it concern you at all that when we go to Walmart or Lowe's and we buy something, they ask us for our phone number or they ask us for our email? When we go on the internet, we punch in a site, all of a sudden you say to yourself, how do they know that? Does this, knowing that we're on the verge of attempting to gather more data, again, under the belief that this is going to help student outcomes, does this student data and possible sharing of personal student data concern you?
Yes, it does. You mentioned the credit card thing and the asking of the question. Certainly, when you talk about identity theft, there is an issue that seems to be growing by leaps and bounds throughout our country. I get something constantly about how this agency or this outfit can protect me from, and it's only going to cost me $35 a month or something, from identity theft. I know it is easier if data is shared about one particular student, for example, because we don't have to repeat everything. But I never want to make it so easy that we lose that particular student's right to privacy.
Just a follow-up to that. It's a perception of parental rights versus the rights of the state, i.e. to the school district. But do you believe that parents still retain their rights even when the children walk through the door? Do you believe a parent can call up tomorrow or next week and say, you know, I'm not really comfortable with this standardized testing. I'm not really comfortable with the potential of data sharing. I'm not really comfortable with this stuff. And so I simply don't want my child to take that test. I simply don't want my child to share that survey or that data. What is your view? You're in a position where you're on the state school board's public education system. You've been a teacher, principal. What is your view of parental rights against that backdrop of growing concern over these potential
Senator Donlevy, I've had this conversation with many, many parents in my years of in school. I can tell you from removing a child from eighth grade English class when they were studying mythology because the parent had a real issue with gods and goddesses. Fine, we found something else for that student to do. I don't think parents abdicate their rights because they in Keith Hamilton's words, they loan me their child for 6 hours a day. I may not agree, and I certainly would argue with them if I thought that whatever it was valuable. I know I've been around for so long. I was there when sex education started, and talk about the big hoopla and parents being upset, and it's finally smoothed out. However, if they don't want that to happen in public school, that student shouldn't have to be in that class, as far as I'm concerned.
What about a parent that doesn't want the child to take the upcoming standardized assessments, and they just say, we don't see how this benefits my child, it's not a requirement for graduation, it's not necessarily going to help them get into college, we've looked at it, we've thought about it, and you know what, we just don't want to be part of it. What's your view?
Well, my view would be, I would sit down with that parent and argue it, and point out, and if they persisted, then I guess I would say, doesn't have to take the test.
But as a state school board member, what would be your position on policy? Because the state school board may come out with policy pertaining to these assessments. Do the parents' rights trump the desire of the system to gather data, which the system believes would be helpful, but if a parent does not, who wins out, and does it have to be a battle?
Well, I'd hope it's going to be a battle, and I would hope that anything the school board did not try to usurp the right of the parent. However, Senator Donlevy, when you are making policy that encompasses every student in the state of Alaska, and now I know how many there are. When I was at the House committee, I thought they asked the question about the Anchorage school district, and I missed it by 60,000 kids. Yeah. No, that's not good. I think there's always going to have to be room for somebody to, I think in terms of vaccinations, for example, you have to have your shots before you come to school. However, and there's the howevers. Okay. Are you religious? Is it a religious issue with you? Is it this other kind of issue with you? And, you have to make some kind of, and I don't want to say loophole, but you have to make some kind of concession. However, going back to making the policy has to, it's great and it encompasses everybody's student. And I don't think any time since I've been on the board that we have willingly or knowingly passed a policy that would really be onerous for kids or parents.
Okay, just want to make sure, and I'm just want to be clear, and I'm not trying to box you in a corner, but again, is it your feeling that in the upcoming assessments that parents, if they don't wish to have their children take the test, that they have that right?
I think they do.
Okay. I have a couple more questions if folks want to do follow-ups. Okay. Same question I asked Dr. Hamilton. Esther, what's your view of homeschooling? And there's two types of homeschooling. There's the homeschooling like IDEA, and there's the homeschooling divorced of the school system. You could tackle both, either one, but what's your view of homeschooling?
I have all kinds of admiration for parents who even want to do it, to be perfectly honest with you. Okay, let's talk just momentarily about the student that I have no track of.
Outside the system.
And, there are a lot of parents that don't want government intervention, and I respect that. I worry about those students, however. I worry about them. because I'd like to know that they were tied to something that says they are getting an education. So that flies in the face of what I just said about parents' rights. Okay. But I still worry.
Will your worry manifest itself into policy would be the question that parents are going to have.
Not that way. Because the statewide correspondence for the homeschoolers, how can you argue with it? It's been absolutely wildly successful. What does IDEA have? 3,500 kids or families enrolled. Obviously, it's meeting a need. Years ago, I made a presentation in the MAPSU, and they were telling me that they had 1,500 families signed up in that their correspondence program that the school was running. I said, are there that many kids living that far away from school? They said, oh, no, the school bus goes right by their mailbox, you know. So parents are making that choice. The thing about there's, I'm a concrete sequential, and the fact that they're tied into a program that says there are certain standards that you have to meet, you know, testing that you have to do, and you get help through the statewide correspondence programs. So I feel better about those than that kid that I'm not too sure is getting anything. And that's a worry. No, I'm not going to make a policy that he has to sign up.
And I have one last question for you. It's just a follow-up from Senator Huggins. Knowing that there would appear to be a number and a growing number of folks that were concerned about how the standards were adopted, whether there's going to be data sharing, et cetera, if there was a way to recalibrate or if there was a way to do that differently, is that something you would explore? In other words, bringing folks in? I don't know quite the answer, but would things have been done differently knowing what you know now?
I don't think so. I someplace in here, and you're not interested in all the but I have how many meetings there were, and summits and standards development, public comment. We expanded our public comment on our board from 30 days, 90 days to 6 months. It went out in newsletters. I don't know how we could have been more informative. Okay, maybe we could have been. Or had invited more people to participate in the formation of these standards. So I really, maybe it's just because I'm not creative enough, but I can't think of another way to do it.
Thank you. Any additional questions? And I just want to let folks know that Dr. Marty Lassiter is online for the PTPC part. He was one of the last ones we were waiting for to get here. But are there any additional questions for Esther? Senator Huggins?
Yeah, just very quickly, Esther, and thanks for being here today and being very candid in your answers. There's a term, and because of your tenure and experience across a wide spectrum of time teaching and in other capacities, there's been a significant number of articles that reflect on, I'll call it, feminization of boys in elementary, starting in elementary school. You can interpret, I'll tell you, my interpretation from reading the article was essentially saying, you can't play rough and tumble things, you have to do jump rope, right? And the role models and the teachers, and not to be sexist, but, super majority females. And so boys, who, let's call it boys be boys, can't be boys because the expectation in that sort of environment, some would call feminization of boys. Is that something I shouldn't worry about, or have you ever heard of before, or what is the right answer?
Well, when I think about in my tenure, not on the board, but just in professional education, I would say it was going the other way. We have girls on wrestling teams. We have girls playing hockey. And when I went to school, we had no girls doing much of anything, to tell you quite frankly, and we played half-court basketball. So maybe it's going the other way. Senator Huggins, I just haven't heard that one.
Yeah, and not to belabor, but for 30 seconds, someone's got an email in the last couple days, Title IX is point well taken.
Okay.
A good parry. Father emails a couple, three pages on a iPhone and says, you know, my son was at school and he was getting pushed around and jerked around, and boom, he struck back and knocked the other guy's tooth out, and because he was tired of getting pushed around. I know there's not an answer to that, but, you know, I think part of our country is the reason that it is that people stood up and took a stance, and self-protection is one of those. It's kind of like, I won't use the cowboy example, but I will. You know, it's a lot of people carry guns. We have the business of the right to carry concealed. Is there a solution to that, or is it just one of those things that in our modern-day society is too hard to fix?
No, I don't think it's too hard to fix. I don't think that we'll ever fix it for good. But we do bullying training, you know, and we talk straight stuff to kids about getting help. Fighting has, in my tenure as an assistant principal in the 70s, I didn't know girls fought. Well, I certainly found out, you know, man, I'll tell you, we had some real fisticuffs going. But I think we've done a fairly decent job in trying to give kids alternative ways to handle what is can be a volatile situation. And it starts at elementary school. We talk about it. I was a junior high principal. We talked about it at junior high. Will it ever be eradicated? The answer is no. I don't believe it will. But I think we can temper it and at least cut it down.
Yeah, thank you. The chairman's going to swing at me if I don't be quiet. Yeah. Mr. Chairman, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you very much, Esther. It's almost 5:30. We probably go on to 9 o'clock tonight, to be honest with you.
Okay, I'm done?
Yep, you're done. And what we're going to do is, can the group stay an extra 5 minutes to hear Dr. Lassiter, who's online, for the other section? Okay, thank you very much. So we're going to complete this section, and I do that by the following. So I want to thank Esther and Keith for their willingness to serve on the Alaska State Board of Education. In accordance with AS 390580, the Education Committee reviewed the following and recommends that appointments to the... Well, that's the wrong one. Before to the professional teaching practices before... That's the next one. So, review that the appointments to the Alaska State School Board... reviewed the following and recommends the appointments be forwarded to a joint session for consideration, and this has to do with the Alaska State School Board for Dr. Keith Hamilton and Esther Cox. This committee does not appoint, nor does this committee confirm appointments. This committee merely hears the nominees, and that's all we do, and then we forward on to the greater body, the larger body of a joint session to determine if those appointments would be confirmed. So with that, we're going to take a brief at ease, and we're going to sign the documents. Then we're going to go to Marty Lassiter and go back to the Professional Teaching Practices Commission. So brief at ease. So we're back in session. I'm going to extend this for a few minutes. Dr. Lassiter, are you online?
Yes, I am. Senator Gordon Levy.
Okay, so Doctor, we're going to go back just so the public knows what we're doing. We had first heard folks, Rebecca Hemschute and David Legg, who were nominees for the Alaska Professional Teaching Practices Commission. We took it at ease and held that particular discussion until we could get you on online. And so, Dr. Lassiter, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your experiences, and why you want to be part of the PTPC?
Yes, first, I would like to thank you and the committee for accommodating my schedule. I really am most appreciative of that. For the record, I am Marty Lassiter. I have been a teacher, principal, superintendent, and now I represent the university system on the PTPC. I've spent 25 years as an administrator in the state, worked with the senator. I know you're granting me time, so that's as much as I'm going to say so that you have the maximum time to ask any questions you might want.
Questions for members of the committee for Dr. Lassiter. Senator Gardner.
I'm actually looking for my question. You had some, I'm sorry, your resume is so extensive that I'm having trouble finding it, but you have some specialty in reading instruction, is that correct?
I do. I have a reading specialist.
Okay. Thank you. And there's sort of a national movement about trying to improve reading skills so that third graders are reading for information rather than learning to read. Are you familiar with that, and what can you tell me about your opinion of it?
I, through the chair, I am familiar with it. I think it's a very good thing because it's the pathway to learning in our schools. I am very supportive of effective systems that help our young folks master reading for meaning and pleasure.
Thank you. Yes, that last part's important, too. So there's a little bit of tension between, as I understand it, two different schools of thought, and one is that if you have a third grader who's not reading at grade level, that child should be retained, and the other school of thought is that they should get a lot more focused instruction, and I guess the RTI model. Do you have an opinion about that, or are they not in conflict?
I do think that the use of retention should be very, very selective, and it should be a different treatment, not more of the same, not louder and slower. But looking at the needs of the individual student and being very diagnostic and assessing regularly to see that it is working. Again, through the chair, Senator Gardner.
Thank you.
Questions for Dr. Lassiter?
A follow-up, and I know our time is tight, but do most teacher training programs, in your opinion, provide adequate education or adequate preparation for K through third grade teachers to identify the specific deficits and know how to respond effectively? Or is there something else needed, in your opinion?
Through the chair, I believe the University of Alaska Southeast feels very strongly about specialization in both reading and math, and is addressing both of those through significant hires and significant demands. Is it enough for everyone? I can't say that. I can tell you, Senator Gardner, that it is a priority not only of what I have said, but the University of Alaska Southeast.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Senator Huggins, did you have a question?
No.
Senator Giesel, did you have a question?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Doctor, I believe that's all we have, and let me read the following, please. In accordance with AS3905080, the Education Committee reviewed the following and recommends the appointments before to a joint session for consideration. Rebecca Hemshoot, this is for the Professional Teaching Practices Commission, Rebecca Hemshoot, Sitka, Martin Lester, Juno, David Legg, Chugiak. This does not reflect the intent by any members to vote for or against the confirmation of the individuals during any further sessions. So with that, we're going to end the meeting and sign the documents. I want to thank you, Doctor, and this meeting is adjourned.